Emma and I share moments in time. I am a member of the baby boomer generation, in which TV has been a steady presence since day one. Thousands of black and white images must have flickered across my retina in the early 60s, imparting who knows what subliminal messages to my impressionable mind. In a 1961 speech, Newton Minow, the Federal Communications Commissioner, memorably characterized TV as a vast wasteland, consisting of game shows, westerns, and unrealistic family dramas. But I truly loved the wasteland. And then, in 1964, the feminist Betty Friedan weighed in with an article in TV Guide titled TV and the Feminine Mystique, in which she stated that TV represented the American woman as stupid, unattractive, and insecure, silently suffering through the stifling life of a full-time homemaker. Friedan was referring to domestic dramas such as Leave It to Beaver or The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, where the dutiful wife bustles around doing drudgy domestic chores, waiting for the moment when the husband returns from some nameless job, flings open the door, and says, "Hi, honey, I'm home." Now, I certainly wasn't aware of the swirling social issues and the burgeoning women's movement, but looking back on it, I think that Betty Friedan's message might have resonated with me. After all, it's right there in my 1958 yearbook, which asked first graders what we all wanted to be when we grew up. My response was a very tepid, "I guess I'll be a mother," as if sadly accepting my expected fate and reluctantly foregoing any consideration of alternative careers. I was already getting the sense that my bright and energetic mother was straining at the tight confinement of a housewife. My mother loved to write song ditties for birthdays and other celebrations, and I remember her singing one of her verses over the phone to one of her friends. How does all that priceless, precious knowledge that I learned at Vassar College help me cope with sinks full of spit and grit? And then she continued on with the chorus line, which repeated sinks with grit and spit multiple times. Although she was laughing, I felt a dispiriting element of truth in her serenade. Even though I routinely succumb to the vast wasteland, I do think that the appeal of one of my favorite shows, The Avengers, might have been its enlightened view of women. The Avengers, a British show that made it to the U.S. in 1965, was a lighthearted spoof of the James Bond spy genre and featured John Steed and Emma Peel as the two operatives. The Emma character, played by Diana Rigg, was specifically designed to attract male viewers. In fact, during development, the writers referred to her as M Appeal, where the M stood for man. Her clothing was a big part of the attraction, featuring black leather catsuits, segueing to brightly colored clingy jumpsuits, dubbed Emma Peelers. The 1960 reviews freely referred to her entire persona as kinky, a word that had not yet acquired its deviant sexual connotations, but merely described Emma as a fresh, young boundary pusher. The big surprise for the network was that women loved Emma. The storyline emerged that while men wanted Emma Peel, women wanted to be like Emma Peel. She was a bright, independent woman with a witty sense of humor, unflappable even in near-death moments. In one episode, she cheerfully submits to waterboarding and then is thrown into a museum of medieval torture equipment, chained to the wall in a chastity belt. But it was all in good fun, contrasting with the creepy realism of current-day Law and Order, where a quirky medieval museum would be transformed into a fetid sewer with rats, and the chastity belt would morph into some sort of horrible mutilation with a wooden soup spoon. But then, of course, Emma Peel was never a victim. She wrangles her way out of the chastity belt by tipping over the neighboring suit of armor, grabs a spear, and uses it to get the keys. She then dispatches the incoming gang of burly villagers with a few quick karate chops here and there. Even as a naive teenager, I clearly knew that Emma Peel was sexy, but also that she was beautiful without being va-va-va-voom. I loved her undyed and uncrimped hairdo. Her basic brown hair fell softly to her shoulders. Occasionally she would run her fingers through her hair and toss it back, a far cry from other TV moms, and my mother, who went to the beauty parlor for a lacquered perm. Let's face it, I knew I was never going to be any kind of Emma Peel, nor would I ever wear kinky catsuits, but all the same, Emma's was an aspirational look, compared to, say, Marilyn Monroe or the Bond girls, whose roles were all about sexual conquest. Emma's predecessor on the show was a character named Kathy Gale, played by an honor black man, who left the show to play Pussy Galore in Goldfinger. I hope that she got paid handsomely to subject herself to such a demeaning and dreadful double entendre name, which James Bond always pronounced as a purring pussy. Like Emma, Pussy was an expert in martial arts, and there is a fight scene in a horse barn where she and Bond take turns flipping each other into piles of hay. But the fight quickly transforms into energetic foreplay, as Pussy finally succumbs when Bond pins her into a pile of scratchy hay. In contrast, Emma Peel had a refreshing relationship with her dapper partner John Steed. A sexual context could hardly be ignored. One of Diana Rigg's great attributes was her looks, but the part was written to be sexually ambiguous. For example, there was little physical contact between the two of them. At most, Emma would straighten the flower in Steed's lapel. Sure, there was a very witty repartee between Steed and Mrs. Peel, but it seemed more like friendly teasing than a sexual jousting match. Imagine the spectrum of male-female relationships. At one end is a loving relationship between two siblings, and at the other end Marilyn Monroe is poured into a skin-tight, barely-there, sequined dress, singing a breathless happy birthday to John Kennedy. On this spectrum, Emma Peel and John Steed would find themselves in the elusive but sought-after middle ground, friends of opposite sexes whose relationship is not defined by the man or woman's spouse, true and equal friends with no other agenda than enjoying each other's company. The character of Emma Peel was not perfect. First of all, while Steed was a professional, Emma was described as a talented amateur. Apparently the show's developers, presumably all men, were not liberated enough to let Emma be a professional with a paying job. Also, I didn't care for her status as a widow. Her husband was supposedly a test pilot who died in a plane crash, and maybe the show's writers thought single women should still be living with their parents. A widow, on the other hand, was experienced and could manage living alone. When Diana Rigg decided to leave the show after 3 years, she was written out in a very disappointing fashion. Her dead husband reemerges from the depths of the Amazonian jungle, and Emma decides to give up the spy business for married life. Well, I guess that's better than being killed off. Ironically, Diana Rigg followed in the footsteps of her predecessor Honor Blackman when she became a Bond girl in the 1969 movie On Her Majesty's Secret Service, starring George Lazenby as James Bond. Perhaps both women hoped to get a career boost from being a Bond girl, but the movie takes a step backwards in terms of women's liberation. Diana Rigg plays Tracy, an incredibly spoiled and troubled international socialite, and Tracy's father offers to give Bond some key information about the arch-villain Blofeld, but only if he promises to marry his wayward daughter. Gone is the carefree hairstyle and kinky banter of her Avengers days, replaced by a theatrical updo and traditional high society clothing. Like most Bond movies, Tracy's dialogue was very scant, and most of her scenes with Bond consist of chase scenes amid a hail of bullets. They do get married at the end, but in the last scene, one of the bullets finally finds its mark. Tracy gets shot in the head in a drive-by shooting and dies in Bond's arms. Once she departed the Avengers, Diana and I went our separate ways, me to college and medical school, and Diana returned to her theatrical roots and enjoyed a storied career as a Shakespearean stage actress, receiving the honorary title Dame of the Empire in 1966. Some 30 years later, Nick and I were in London, and I spotted Diana Rigg in the play Mother Courage. I knew nothing about the play, but we were both excited to see the fabulous Mrs. Peel in the flesh. Of course, the tiny problem was that I had fixed the 30-year-old Diana Rigg in my mind, and thus was totally unprepared for the 60-year-old woman who now played a grandmother. When Diana and I first crossed paths in the 1960s, I considered ourselves in roughly the same demographic, me as a teenager and her as a role model 14 years my senior. Now, 30 years later, I felt that we had totally diverged. I considered myself, perhaps delusionally, still youngish. In contrast, during our hiatus, Diana had traversed from 35 to 65 and was no longer an aspirational mentor, but a cautionary tale. Mother Courage was a worn-out peasant woman who was just defeated by life, and Diana hobbled around the stage using a cane. It was a very depressing anti-war play in which all three of her children died. I yearned for the carefree days when Mrs. Peel and I were young and spirited, with a rosy future stretching out in front of us. The next time I saw Diana Rigg was in the 2006 movie The Painted Veil. Her name was in small print in the credits, so I knew she didn't have a starring role, but off I went. By now, I had caught up to Diana Rigg. I was an empty nester in my late 50s, the bulk of my career behind me, and I was open to role models to guide my third third. And there she was at the very end of the movie, playing an elderly nun, but the epitome of graceful aging, with a wise and all-knowing smile, proudly displaying her hard-earned but kindly wrinkles. We're back on the same page again.